Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from the Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War and have around 6,000 members worldwide. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 1st of May 2025, and this is episode 354. On this week's podcast, Dr. Stephen Stanford discusses the London Irish in the early stages of the Great War. The London Irish were a battalion of the London Regiment and originally were a rifle volunteer corps, and they recruited men with ties to Ireland. However, on the outbreak of war, the poet Patrick McGill claimed that he and the colonel were only truly Irish. Stephen's talk covers the battalion from its formation to its deployment in March 1915. This talk was delivered as part of the London Pride Conference held in 2024, which explored the history of the London Territorial Force from 1908 to 1921.
Thank you for inviting me this morning. I'd like to begin by stating that the analysis contained in this paper is based on the identification of two-thirds of the men who were serving in the London Irish Rifles pre-war, and on the declaration of war, and with the 1st 18th Battalion, which went overseas in 1915. There is, however, one caveat, and that is that the information that is available on any particular man varies greatly, you know, from just mainly name, rank, number, to a complete service record, and also in the cases of some, it's able to identify them on the census record. On the 1st of April 1908, the 16th Middlesex London Irish Rifle Volunteer Corps became the 18th County of London Battalion, the London Regiment, London Irish Rifles, part of the newly formed Territorial Force. And while in theory its role had not changed, there was an acceptance that men could be asked or could volunteer to serve overseas in the event of a war. Recruitment of a new battalion, like many other battalions in London at the time, was pretty slow. London in particular seemed to have had an aversion to the new Territorial Force battalion. So that in July 1908, only nine of battalions in London had satisfied the requirement to have 30% of the ranks filled, which was required to receive official recognition. Initial recruitment to the battalion began well, with 315 former volunteers re-enlisting within the first quarter. Although these represented less than 50% of the men who had paraded with the battalion just 9 months before. Transfers from the volunteer battalion perhaps might have been higher, but for the transfer of battalion's cyclist company to the newly formed 25th County of London Cyclist Battalion. While early recruitment was encouraging, evidence from the surviving service records of the men who joined in the first quarter of 1908-09 suggests that as many as two-thirds only enlisted for a single year, although many of them later would re-enlist on a year, but normally only on a year-to-year basis, which presented quite a problem when it came to the start of the war, when many men were coming up to time for their re-enlistment, for their engagement to terminate. In common with other battalions, the London Irish undertook a series of route marches through London with the aim of popularising the territorials and increasing recruitment. Following a series of such marches, the battalion recruited some 380 men. Right, that's fine. They recruited 380 men in a two-week period in 1909. On the 1st of October 1909, the battalion reached a pre-war peak of 767 men. This gives you some idea of how far short the battalion's recruitment was against what their establishment was. However, it was unable, as you can see, to maintain that level of recruitment and enlistment, a phenomenon apparent in the majority of London regiments at that time. From its 1909 peak, the strength of the battalion declined steadily until by the 1st of April 1913, it had fallen to just 476 men. It rose again in the early months of 1914, increasing by 16% in the first few months. But the battalion was still 342 men short when war was declared in August. While the London Irish claimed to recruit only men with connections to Ireland, evidence suggests that not only was this criteria mostly ignored, but also that the social background of the members was less exclusive than that of the so-called class battalions, such as London Scottish. An analysis of census and service records of a third of members of the London Irish still serving at the beginning of the war shows that over half were skilled workers, with a further quarter employed in middle class employment, while the remainder were either skilled or unskilled labour. A similar analysis shows that the battalion's links to Ireland, at least among the rank and file, was now tenuous, to say the least, with less than 1% of those serving at the beginning of the war actually born in Ireland. A further 3% had one Irish parent, at least one Irish parent. And if you added extra, perhaps men with Irish sounding names, then what you would find that there was only another 6%, supposedly perhaps from the third or fourth generation of Irish immigrants, which was basically showing you that less than 10% had any connection with Ireland whatsoever. By contrast, the 19 officers serving on the 1st of April 1908, although not of the level of social elite of the class battalions, were nevertheless all from a solidly middle-class background. And evidence suggests that they had a closer affiliation to with Ireland than the rank and file, with over 25% either being born in Ireland or having at least one Irish parent. And that included the commanding officer at the time, who would go on to command a battalion of the Ulster Division. While the primary function of the London Irish was the provision of military training, the pre-war battalion provided a number of social and sporting activities for its members. In addition to its normal rifle practice, the London Irish had an active rifle club which took part in a number of competitions, not only in military circles, but also in civilian circles. Members of the battalion were also provided with opportunities to compete in amateur boxing competitions. And in 1907, the London Irish Rifles were elected as a member of the Amateur Swimming Association. It is perhaps for the football team that the battalion is most famous. However, perhaps it's famous not because of what it did in pre-war, but more what it did at the Battle of Loos. For which it is most remembered. In the years before the Great War, the team played in the Territorial Cup before being defeated by the London Scottish 3-0 in the semi-finals in 1913. The battalion team was also played in Division 1 of the London Suburban League. In addition to sporting activities, the battalion also provided the social outlets for its members, smoking concerts, band concerts. The battalion was held in an annual dinner, the St. Patrick's Day dinner, which was attended by a lot of the Irish glitterati living in London. It was the battalion's band that was most in demand, performing at numerous theatres across the capital, and was engaged by the London County Council to play in parks during the summer. The battalion's headquarters at the beginning of the period was located in Duke Street, just off the Strand, which tends to be different from the analysis so far, which had been bought by the Friends of the regiment in for £7,500 in 1897. Although limited in space, the unit also had made use of the Westminster Hall as a drill hall. One of the facilities that the Duke Street accommodation provided was a Morris tube rifle range in the basement, where firing practice took place on a miniature rifle range. In November 1909, approval was given to acquire a new premises across the river, but it fell through in the later stages of negotiation. However, in March 1912, the battalion moved to the its quarters at the newly refurbished Duke of York's Barracks, Chelsea. The new headquarters provided the battalion with a range of facilities, including its own canteen, offices, recreation rooms, and access to a swimming pool, a running track, football pitches, and six rifle ranges. On the 1st of August 1914, the London Irish had left for their annual training camp, and within 24 hours were returned to London. On the 4th of August, members of the battalion received their call-up papers and reported for duty, every man receiving £5 in gold on mobilisation. At this stage, the battalion was still almost 350 men under strength, although within 10 days, it was nominally a full battalion. While there's little evidence that many pre-war members of the battalion volunteered to serve overseas before the outbreak of war, by March 1915, when the battalion went to France, 294, or in other words, 46% of the men serving on the 4th of August 1914 accompanied the battalion. Surviving records show that the majority of those men volunteered in September 1914, although two were found to have volunteered as late as the week before they went overseas. From an examination of surviving service records and medal rolls, only a further 60 pre-war rank and file appear to have later proceeded overseas, either as a reinforcement for the 1st 18th, or with the 2nd Battalion, or with another unit. On the 31st of August, the London Irish were authorised to raise a reserve battalion, recruitment to which was completed on the 5th of September, 5 days. During this period, a total of 1,050 men were enlisted in the ranks, and senior NCOs and officers were provided by the 1st Battalion. This reserve battalion was later become the 2nd 18th London Irish Rifles, when a 3rd battalion was raised again in May 1915. Contemporary newspaper records claimed that 90% of its officers were Irishmen, while the bulk of the rank and file hail from the island, which gives them their name. The Daily Telegraph stressed the inclusive nature of the Irish response to the new battalion, claiming the ranks included Ulstermen, Nationalists, Protestants and Catholics. An analysis of surviving service records and pre-war census records of 523 men shows that this is really a bit egging the pudding, because I was unable to find very many who fell into these classes at all. Most of these men joined perhaps because it was their nearest battalion. Of those identified as being born outside Ireland, only seven had at least one Irish parent. The press made much of the wide-ranging social backgrounds of the recruits to the new battalion, alleging that public schools of the country were well represented, not only among the officers, but in great measure in the ranks, which included barristers, solicitors, stockwork brokers, and their clerks. A lone examination of 283 records relating to original members of the battalion found no stockbrokers and no lawyers at all. They did, however, show that the number of middle-class occupations had increased over that which had been represented pre-war. One London Irish Rifles officer from Belfast wrote, "A very large percentage of the men in the ranks are gentlemen. One is a cousin of Lord Donoughmore, another a nephew of Lord Dunleith. Many of them have been educated at Eton, Harrow and other public schools." Referring to the requirement for all married men to make an allotment to their wives from their pay, he pointed out that one soldier in my company did not observe the regulation, and being brought up for the breach, he said he had not thought his wife should get a separation allowance, as he already allowed her £3,000 a year. However, if it was really necessary, he would allow her not only part, but all of his military pay of 7 shillings a week, as that would save him having to line up on pray parade. The experience of Sidney Hopkins, who enlisted on the 1st of September 1914 and was only 17 at the time, might be more typical. Presented with a choice of joining a yeomanry regiment or a Royal Army Medical Corps, he decided that he didn't want a horse and he liked the look of the walking out dress of the London Irish, so he joined them instead. There's lots more work to be done on the London Irish, and it's very hard to give a synopsis in such a short time. But to say, though, it's like many Irish regiments, they became Irish rather than were Irish. And I think that's a fair assessment of the London Irish.
You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Rusman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS 2195. Until next time.